Welcome to the Triple Feature Podcast with me, Jillian Rick, and my co-hosts Stephen Dendy and Pedro Vargas. Hi, guys.
Hi.
This is episode 9 of Triple Feature Podcast. We did something a little bit different this month. We decided to head over to our local Walmart and pick from the $5 bin. Just random, stick our hand in, pick out a movie, and we got some real interesting choices this month. I was unlucky enough to pull out the 2006 reboot remake of Miami Vice, a movie that had very little to do with the original show and very little interest for the people involved. But we'll talk about that. What did you guys pick?
Well, Stephen, if you want to, you know.
Okay, I picked the 1981 classic Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior by George Miller.
Yes, and I picked The Gift, which stars Jason Bateman. I forget the name of the director and the other woman, but yes,
Joel Edgerton.
I think.
Okay. Well, yeah, that's from 2015. That's from this year, I think.
Okay.
That's much more modern movie than. And what Jill and Stephen picked.
Yes, much more sooner.
Yes. Very sooner.
It's much more sooner in time.
Yes.
Yeah, exactly.
It's, yeah. So, Miami Vice. Wow. I think we are all in agreement that this movie sucked on toast.
This movie can go straight to hell.
Yeah, I think everyone involved in this movie didn't give a shit.
No.
It had a ridiculously high budget. It had Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx.
Yeah, I mean, right. Immediately when the movie started, it had this, like, 80s bullshit speedboat chase race thing.
All of which was completely uninteresting. The most boring
and
race
had no point
you've ever seen.
Had no bearing on the story whatsoever.
Like, I didn't care. Yeah, like, all of a sudden, you got the boat thing, and then they're like in this sort of undercover thing in a club, but then we completely forget about that, and then we go on to this whole other case, and then we forget about that, but it's still somewhat connected to the bigger case that's the movie, and it's like, what?
it was not good. You could see how bored the actors were. They didn't care.
Yeah, they don't know, you know, and the way it was shot, like, it looked so cheap.
I thought it was shot pretty nicely, actually. I mean,
no, it was shot horribly. Just about every aspect of this movie was horrible. The ADR was horrible.
Yes.
The sound mixing was horrible.
The thing is, like, I get what he was trying to go for with that sort of look, but it didn't really, you know, it didn't fit, you know, it just didn't look right. It just felt cheap. To me, it felt cheap.
I didn't mind the actual cinematography. Everything that was on screen was a mess. But, the person actually filming it did a pretty good job. I mean,
I disagree. There were some questions.
Like a documentary type kind of look to it.
I guess. The thing is, it was so disjointed and just not interesting that it was hard to piece together any kind of interest in any one aspect. I mean, they had really weird music choices.
I didn't pay attention to the score,
but there was weird music cues, like in dance clubs and
oh my god, that dance club with the most generic dance club cliche.
Everything about this movie was generic. I mean, when they tried to be, I don't know, provocative, it was like,
And then the whole...
It was like what teenagers think porn looks like.
Yeah. Oh, my God. Oh, God.
You know,
or what it's like to be in Miami or whatever.
It literally turns into a porn scene complete with 90s porn music and all, like, that right?
Was, yeah. Right.
For no reason. Like,
softcore porn music.
Exactly. Yeah. It had that soft jazz going. Oh, it was terrible.
Okay, now, yeah, you're probably going to think I'm crazy, but did the
you're crazy.
The one Colombian bad guy, did he not look like Fred Armisen?
With yeah.
It's like, it was like an episode of Portlandia.
Right. I mean, this, every scene in this movie could immediately be, like, changed up by one line being changed, and it could turn into a spoof of a movie like that, because it was so generic and just...
Like, I'm sure I've seen Fred Armisen play that character in something, you know.
Right. Now, the other thing that's interesting is the remake, reboot aspect of it. I did a little digging because I don't think any of us have seen the original Miami Vice, correct?
I think I've caught, like, some scenes. I've never watched the whole episode, but I think I've caught some scenes. There was a lot of 80s neon.
I mean, I know it had the jackets, you know, that style.
It had that, like,
the white coat. Kind of,
yeah, yeah. It was like, almost not at the Roxbury style
right.
dress.
Yeah, and they had
well, that's 70s.
They had a DeLorean, right, in the show?
No, not at the Roxbury. It's not 70s.
No, it's not.
No, that's like 90s, 80s, 90s.
But I meant the original Miami Vice was.
Oh no! 70s. The original Miami Vice is 80s.
Oh, okay. See, yeah, I know nothing about it.
It is pure unbridled 80s.
But what I saw of the, I looked up some reviews online, just from different sources, and some people seem to think that it has nothing to do with the original, which is likely.
I would agree.
And some people are of the opinion that this was a more realistic version of what Miami Vice couldn't show because it was on TV in the 80s.
And those people are...
I mean, I get that vibe, you know? I mean, it's...
I get what they were going
for. It's raw, it felt real, you know, it didn't... I mean, you know, knowing how the 80s were, it you know, it was very cheesy. Everything was cheesy in the 80s.
Right, it was upbeat.
Even the
it
cheese
was happy,
was
cheesy. Yeah.
Yeah, so, like, you know, it was, it of course, it had to have been, you know,
right.
Completely.
Yeah, and I get making realistic, and Miami Vice is one you could do realistic, but there is nothing about this that...
It didn't
feel realistic. It felt like generic realistic.
The reason it didn't feel realistic was because the story was not compelling at all.
Yeah,
they gave us no reason to care about any of the characters.
No, like
you've got Colin Farrell.
Dialogue, you didn't care what they were saying,
yeah.
You know.
Jamie Foxx might as well not have had any lines because it nothing he said mattered. Colin Farrell looks bored as hell. He's playing an American with a 70s porn haircut.
And stash. Right. And he does stash.
And, well, yeah, that's included. But it was like, what are you going for?
Like, they look so, you know, like, ugh. Like,
and then...
Like, women are, you know, ugh. Like, women are into these kind of guys? Like,
seriously,
no.
Seriously, like, ugh. And then, all of a sudden, out of nowhere, he's suddenly in love with this woman who I only found out later was supposed to be part Chinese, part Colombian. She seemed all Chinese to me. But
okay, yeah, I got a little confused there because
I thought she was an Asian
woman playing a Latin woman, and I'm like, huh? What's why?
Well, see, I thought she was just an Asian woman who had grown up in like,
right.
Cuba
that's
or
what
whatever.
I thought. That's what I thought.
There's no need to put.
Yeah, they could have just said an Asian woman who grew up in Colombia or whatever. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. But anyway,
but
I mean, that doesn't really matter.
But she speaks like an Asian woman who has just come over.
Right. She has a Chinese accent.
Like
that's what
it was very heavy to the point where I was having trouble trying to decipher what she was saying. And I was already having trouble deciphering what the drug lord people were saying.
Oh, no, I understood her a lot easier than I understood the Colombians.
Really? Because I understood her worse than the Colombian.
Oh, no.
Now, it was a little heavy on the accents with a lot of the Latin people. Yeah. Colombian, whatever.
I don't tend to find movies like this interesting to begin with.
What I wrote down in my notes was that this movie is anti-me. Like, I would never watch a movie like this.
Now, I love action movies. Like, yeah. I have no problem with action movies. I don't like...
Like, it depends. Like, if it's a good drama, like, I'll watch it. Like, if it's a good story, I'll watch it.
Yeah. I mean, if the actors give off the impression that they care about what's going on, I'd probably be more into it. Jamie Foxx is so generic. Just,
Oh my God. Do you remember that one part at the very beginning when that guy, you know, during the suicide part where the guy was about to walk out in the traffic, they give this, both of them, both Farrell and Fox, give this deadpan stare right into the camera.
Yeah.
For like 10 seconds.
Nothing is happening.
Slowly pans over to some concrete wall for some bullshit reason. it's pretty much. That is the movie in a nutshell. No one cares.
Yeah, nobody cares. Yeah.
There was one moment that I actually laughed. There was the scene towards the beginning when the drug deal goes bad and they shoot up the car with the people in it. And you see you see the car from inside.
Slow
motion being like shot up and the dummy's arm falls off.
And
goes flying in slow motion off screen. And I was just like, are you kidding me?
Yeah, I mean,
That's the take you went with.
Yeah, right.
And
it's
God. And I think, Pedro, you mentioned there was one point where some guy gets shot point blank in the head.
Right, yeah.
And they cut to the guy who's very obviously just had a circle painted onto his head.
Right,
he takes like 10 extra seconds to drop his head to the ground.
He's like, I'm dead? Oh, I should just slowly lie my head like, right.
This is not Roadrunner. You don't look down, notice that you're not standing on anything, and then die.
Yeah.
You get shot in the head, you die. You're dead.
You just immediately fall, your head falls. Yeah, like, what the... They didn't care. Just, they didn't care.
Yeah, that just shows how much they didn't care. And,
And they could have informed, like, a consistent gun effect. Like, at some point, you hear, like, gun, gun, bang, bang, bang. Another part, you hear, pop, 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 pop.
It's like, who's popping popcorn over there?
I just want to say that I really wish that guns made a gun, gun, bang, bang, bang sound.
Bang, bang, bang,
bang, bang.
Gun, 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 bang, 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 bang.
Like, there's no one like saying bang, bang.
I wish when you, like, pull the trigger, it went gun, gun.
Gun, gun.
Gun, gun, bang, bang.
Gun, gun, bang, bang.
Oh, my God. I mean.
Gun, gun.
Bazooka!
Firecracker!
Oh, my goodness.
Handgun! And
there is
one! Handgun!
Taser!
Oh, God. Love it.
Rocket launcher!
Pepper spray!
Pepper spray.
It's like if guns were Pokemon. They just all called out their names. Beretta. Beretta.
Yeah. Oh, Lord.
Tommy gun.
Gun.
Water pistol.
Sniper rifle.
What?
Silencer. Okay.
No, right. Silencer is just gun, gun. All right. Oh my goodness.
There's only one instance I can ever think of ever showing this movie to anyone, and that is in a class of how not to make a movie.
That or torture.
That or torture.
Probably, yeah. I mean, there was one scene that got me like, oh, what's happening here? was the whole, when they took hostage of J.D. Fox's character, the wife or the girlfriend, I don't know.
Yeah.
The partner, who was she? I don't know. God only knows.
And I have an issue with her whole situation, but continue, Pedro.
Go on.
Yeah, I mean, you know, that whole part where he just, I guess he didn't care, and then he shot that one dude that attacked him on the ground, like, you know, showing that he didn't care, he just wanted to save his wife. And then the Latin woman, who's the partner, shot the other dude who was holding the detonator. Like, that whole part, that's where I really... Yeah. What's going on here, you know?
But then it all falls apart.
Yeah, and then I was like, I didn't, you know, yeah, and then all of a sudden you just go back to the most boring.
Oh my god, and that green screen when they were like, when it finally exploded.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, that was bad.
This...
So the issue I had with that woman's whole situation, I assume it's girlfriend. I don't think they're married.
I'm going to have to go with girlfriend, yeah.
But they don't really tell you.
But she's also like,
I couldn't figure out if she was a cop as well.
Yeah, I think because she's the one that gave them their fake identities,
right? Which doesn't make sense to me. Why
wasn't she there when they were trying to give?
I mean, she was always involved.
Yeah, in the beginning, Colin Farrell and Jamie Foxx are out on some mission. I don't know what they're doing, and the. Woman, do we know her name? I know that Colin Farrell's name is Sunny. I couldn't be bothered to care
what
the rest of the people's names were.
Yeah.
I mean, I just know him by, like, yeah.
Jamie Foxx's name is Tubbs.
Tubbs, because that's Colin a good name. Colin
Farrell's name is something Sunny. Sunny's a nickname, but his real name is Crockett.
Okay, so Sunny Corleone.
And James Earl Tubbs.
Tommy Corleone.
And James Earl Tubbs, yes.
James Earl Tubbs.
Betty Crocker is the woman. She's sitting at home, and they're on some, like, fake drug deal with the Colombians, and she gets this big thing of roses.
Yes!
First of all, I thought it was going to have some kind of detonator in it.
Right! Oh my god!
And then when it didn't turn out they come to the conclusion, oh, it's just a message to say, we know where you live.
Yeah, some bad guy knows where you live.
And you stay there.
It's just like she doesn't...
Go to a freaking motel!
She doesn't, like, you know, she doesn't, like, react in a way nervous or anything.
And then she goes, don't worry about me, because then you'll do a bad job. How about you save your own life and go to a motel?
I don't care. What are you doing?
Yeah, like, I don't...
I think maybe, I don't think it was well established, was when she was looking out the window, I don't think she wanted to seem... Because she probably thought someone was looking into the window of where the Jamie Foxx lives, and she found out that those flowers weren't for her... And that maybe they were looking into the house, and if she were to react,
assumed it was Smell the Fart acting.
Sure.
assumed it was just generic, oh, now I look sad and pensive, blah, blah, blah. You know what I mean?
Like, but...
No, it was the, did I turn the stove off?
Yeah.
Yes. No,
I did turn the stone off, the stove off.
I just shart.
Damn it, I did short.
Take my diapers. it wasn't well established. I didn't really like, why didn't she react all crazy when, you know?
So yeah. Bad movie all around.
Yeah. Yes. Avoid this movie like the plague.
Yeah, I mean...
The one thing I kind of wanted to touch on was this movie could have been a standalone movie without the name Miami Vice.
Yeah, this was just one of those things that they just slap a title on, make some money on it. The generic
only reason
stuff.
This movie did as good as it did was because of the name recognition. And that pisses me off.
Right, nostalgia value as well.
Not because I have any kind of connection or nostalgia or or love for the original. I have no idea what the original is. Right. But I could tell you that it's nothing like this. And if this movie, if they had tried to make this movie without a popular name, it would have bombed because it's horrible.
The thing is, it never is with reboots. When they reboot something from the 80s, like, it's never like the original, you know.
And, you know, I understand update things. I understand needing to update them to fit modern times.
Yeah.
But this didn't feel like that. This felt like, I want to make a cop movie. This is kind of like what they did on Miami Vice. Let's just use the name Miami Vice.
It kind of felt like maybe Michael Mann, he was like, I want to make a cool cop movie. And then, like, executives were like, you know what? It kind of reminds me like Miami Vice. Why don't you
make it? That's weird, because this is Michael Mann we're talking about. And he's made some good movies.
I know that he has a good reputation. I know that he's done some good movies. I've never seen any of his movies.
Can you list a few, Steven?
Hold on, give me a second here to look up director. Let's see. The Last of Mohicans.
Okay.
Oh wow, he did that.
He did that. He Ollie, the one with Will Smith.
Well, that was good.
The Which Insider.
One? Which he, one is the one with Will Smith?
Ollie.
Bob Mahoney.
Oh, he did. I never saw it, but yeah, I heard that one was
Public
good.
Public Enemies, Collateral. The one, the movie Collateral with the.
Is that the one with Tom Cruise?
You know what?
Tom
Cruise and Jamie Foxx. Now that you mention it, it did have kind of a resemblance to Public Enemy.
Yeah.
Just the whole. I don't know how to describe it.
Is that a 90s one? Or
no, that's the one with Johnny Depp playing the gangster.
With Al Pacino, I think?
No, Johnny Depp.
No, but Johnny Depp and Al Pacino,
Was Pacino in that?
No. That's Heat.
That's Heat. No, since 2000.
No. Heat is the one with Robert De Niro and Al Pacino, right?
Yeah.
No, I'm talking about one with Johnny Depp and Al Pacino in it.
Oh. Al Pacino is not in Public Enemies.
Let me look it up.
Darn it's it. Johnny yeah. Depp. I gotta know.
It's Johnny Depp and Christian Bale.
Christian Bale. That's who you're thinking of.
Bale. Batman.
Yeah, Batman. Wait a minute.
Christian Bale.
Bale.
That's a later movie. I was thinking of a 90s movie. All right, never mind.
Yeah, I don't know what to tell you. I mean, he's a good director. He's done good movies,
and he's a good writer because he wrote Mohicans. He wrote he also wrote Miami Vice. He wrote and directed this piece of garbage, and it's just baffling.
I think he did it for money. You know,
I don't think it's baffling when you look at how much money the movie made and what the budget was. It just looked like a cash cow.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it had very cliche things, cliche elements.
This movie just could be called generic cliche.
Yeah, the movie. There was another thing I didn't really care.
I went into this, thought it was going to be good. I was like, okay, Miami Vice, I wanted to see this, and then...
I figured, you know, slightly, maybe a little entertaining, but no.
The first, I would say... 30 seconds after images came on the screen, I was just like, oh, this is going to be...
Another thing I got really confused, and I know you guys mentioned it, was how the movie started. It was mute.
Yes, I thought I had a bad version.
I hate it when movies do that. Are your movies completely silent?
Yeah. And I was like, where's the sound? Like, you know, it messes with you.
It does. Because sometimes when I'm like watching on Netflix, you know, I have to like wonder, wait, is one of my cables not connected? Because sometimes it happens. You got to jiggle the cable to get some sound in here.
You don't want that.
It's annoying.
Yeah. It is. One other thing is like how they jumped from one country back to Miami. Like, That I didn't like. Like, you know, I didn't care.
To be honest with you, I cared so little I didn't even notice.
I mean, there were times where he's like, "Wait a minute! They were in a hotel trying to do this one thing with a drug, you know, whatever trade, and then all of a sudden they're back in Miami." And it's like they completely forget.
There are terrible edits. There are terrible sounds. There was that one point where the music and background sounds just like you could tell it. You could hear it go dip to let this one guy here say this one line, and then goes right back up.
Yeah, it was horribly mixed.
I'm like, what are you kidding me?
There
was, toward the end, there was a kind of like a heavy metal version of I Can Feel It in the Air Tonight by Phil Collins.
Yeah, it was kind of like alternative, I wouldn't say heavy metal.
Yeah, I guess.
Kind of like 90s alternative type deal.
Hard rock, something like that.
Something weird, yeah.
Which I honestly didn't mind too much, but then they played it like 5 times, and they used it as the like the undercurrent for the entire climactic fight scene.
Yeah, like it didn't
and
fit. Like
they used, I'd say, I mean, for a good 5 minutes.
Was that the same song to the TV show?
No,
something?
I don't think so.
No, I think it was just no.
And you know, I get it. You know, I can feel it coming in the air tonight. There's a fight coming. Ooh, there was a big jump there, and you know. But
yeah,
they spent 5 minutes using this song, kind of building, building, building. You could see, you could hear it building. And then, I don't know if you know that song, but
yeah,
at one point it stops, and then the drums kick in really, really loud, and it's really effective.
Right.
And they're building, and this is just on an editing standpoint. I noticed this, and it drove me nuts.
Yeah.
Because in that song, you've got a beat of silence, and then bam, drums, and you're like, yes. But the way they used it in the movie, they're building, silence, bam, and you're like, you've been playing this for 5 minutes, and you can't use that build-up and that beat the way you're supposed to. That would have been an awesome beat, and it was an explosion.
Terrible editing all around.
They were building up to an
explosion. There were times they wouldn't even let the scene finish. I forget what some of the scenes were, but like they would just not let the scene finish. They would like cut, like right when you know something happened, and like quick edit cut.
Yeah. That guy being shot in the head, that's the entire movie. That's, you know, like that.
Oh, it was so bad.
That's just how you know, the director didn't care, you know?
Yep.
And he is a good director, you know? But, you know, yeah, like, it's just, it really, like, leaves your mouth open, like, you know, like, in awe, like, how bad. Like, wow. Like, he didn't care.
No.
I mean, yeah. I mean, I can appreciate bad movies because bad movies even has, you know, a lot of times there are people, they're still trying the best. They're not very good at it, but they're, at least they're trying.
They're trying.
No one tries.
I have full respect for a bad movie where everyone did their best. No one gave a shit in this movie, and they had plenty of money. Everyone went home rich, and no one did a good job.
Right.
Movies like this, though, they make me mad because no one cares.
Yeah.
No one cares, yeah. It really does. It really does piss you off. Like they don't care about the... Like, it's kind of like saying, like, they don't give a shit about the audience, you know?
No,
because
they don't.
You know, people pay to see that movie in the theaters or whatever. They rent it. And then you produce that so that they can watch it. Like, come on, you know? Mm-hmm. I know you're doing it for money, but you could have at least made that effort.
Right.
To make it a little bit entertaining, you know?
So now we go from a director that didn't care at all... to a movie that was, well, the sequel to a movie that was a very personal project, it seems.
Yeah.
Mad Max was a very low-budget movie in 1979, which I have not seen, but I think I may be checking it out after seeing Road Warrior, which is Mad Max 2. I really enjoyed it. At first, I had no idea what was going on because I hadn't seen the first one, but very quickly, you figure out what's happening.
You figure it out immediately.
Yeah.
I haven't seen the first one either.
Yeah, none of the movies really mattered, like, in terms of impact in the later movies. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. you can watch them in any order whenever you want.
Yeah.
I mean, there's no backstory really plays into anything.
I didn't even recognize Mel Gibson. He's so young in it.
Yeah, it's a very young Mel Gibson.
Yeah, it was...
Pre-blow-up
Mel Gibson. I mean, these are the movies that put him on the map, pretty much.
And there are Australian movies, too,
yeah. I think. Yeah, which is really cool. I was reading up on the first one just because I was interested in what I had missed. And apparently the first one was edited just in the director's house for months and months and months. They just had an editing set up in their house, which is awesome. You know, like, make your movie. Do what you got to do, you know?
Right.
Which is such the opposite of what we just saw with Miami Vice.
Yeah, you got to appreciate that passion.
Yeah, you go from, like, completely no one cares to this guy, this is, like, his
first. This guy did it in his project. Kitchen.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, and they really, you could tell they cared.
Even
with this sequel, you could tell they cared. Every little bit is...
Yeah, it's great.
Doctored to feel like... you're in this world. It's not, you know, right. You're not seeing, you know, cities in the background where there shouldn't be. You're not, you know what I mean? Everything looks very...
You do. It's believable. It has a sense of believability. Yeah.
So basically, for anyone who doesn't know, Mad Max 2 is the sequel to Mad Max, big surprise, which is a post-apocalyptic movie. Set in Australia, where basically the only people left are people who can survive on the road and fight with gangs and do things like that. Steven, you might be able to do a better breakdown of it since you've seen
one. I mean, this is like the movie that like either started or really brought to fruition the whole post-apocalyptic wasteland type movie,
right?
You know, where everyone's fighting over gas, and you got like, you know, your big motorcycle gangs and all that happening. You know, so these movies really either started it or they really took it, you know, took it off, and everyone started.
I could see that. I don't think there was anything, you know, done before those Mad Max movies.
There may have been. I can't remember, so I don't know if it started it, but you can at least say this, like, put it on the map, and everyone started doing these type post-apocalyptic wasteland movies. I mean, even Waterworld is basically just Mad Max, but in water.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
This felt like the kind of movie where I got the feeling I wasn't fully comprehending the full meaning of what I was seeing. You know what I mean? Like, I felt like the director was trying to say something, and he probably got it across, but I may not have picked it up.
I felt like maybe in the first movie he established what sort of, you know, what made that apocalypse, you know, like, because in the beginning we got a little bit into the history of what happened, like why did this world become the way it is,
right?
Yeah.
And I figured maybe in the first one they probably established that a little.
Not
bit
really.
Better. No.
Okay. No. I mean, the first one takes place in a post-apocalyptic. I can't even say that. It takes place at the apocalypse, but it's not as bad as what it is up here. I mean, there's still a city. He is a part of a police force that patrols the highways around the city. So, you know, there's still some civilization going on, but you can tell some stuff has gone down.
Like,
but
is it like in the near? It feels like it's in the near future that where this whole.
I don't think any time date has been given about how far in the.
Because I felt like that's how it is, because they mentioned he was in a police force, and I figured, well, you know, he was in a police force. I figured this is in the near future.
Well, I mean, it was basically like, you know, a post-apocalyptic highway patrolman, basically. That's all he was.
Oh, okay.
It was just him and his partner, and, you know, and driving in their car, patrolling the roads.
Yeah.
What I found interesting watching it is obviously... You know, how could they possibly have predicted? But you have this post-apocalyptic world in which none of the cars are after 1981. And it's like,
yeah.
You know what I mean? It's like, yeah. Of course they couldn't have done anything about that, but it's just funny to watch. Like, there's no, Toyotas running around. It's all like...
But there's also sort of some truth, because, you know, those cars are older, but they're also more stronger, you know, they're...
That's true, they're more metal, so yeah. I mean, today's cars, yeah, are more plasticky, and like, they could, you know...
So when the apocalypse happened, you're going to want and you're going to get a vehicle, you're going to want a knife.
That's true. So they probably see it that way, maybe.
Yeah, I mean, no, it totally worked. It was just me thinking, like,
you know. I know, yeah, it's like, what happened to those cars? Like,
yeah,
what's
like,
up?
What happened to the VW Bug? You know, like...
Yeah, right, yeah.
These movies blew up the popularity of Max's cars. Those,
oh, yeah, I'm sure.
Except those, I think they were Pontiacs.
Yeah.
I think some were...
Blew them up in popularity.
What was Gremlin, right? Gremlin cars.
I don't recall if they said it in the movie. They said something about a V8 supercharged.
Well, you know, the one in Mad Max 2, they called it an interceptor. I don't know if that's the real life name of it, but in the canonicity of this movie, that it's called the Mad Max Interceptor.
Okay.
All right.
I don't know what the real life car. I think the real life car is a Pontiac something.
Yeah.
All right, I gotta mention that dog. That dog is the shit.
Oh God, the dog! Spoiler alert: they kill the friggin' dog.
I know.
Thank God it was off screen.
Yeah.
For me, that's a big check off against.
What I wrote in my notes is "fucker killed the dog." Like that's what I felt. I felt anger.
Yeah, what I loved about the movie was you've got this guy who's obviously been through hell, and the only thing keeping him together is this dog.
I know. Like he had a family member.
He actually had something to care for and keep him going. And then they kill it, and he loses it. He's just like, you know what?
He goes mad, maybe.
Yeah, and you know he. Mad Max, and in the end when he decides to help that village,
mm-hmm.
He did mention like, you know, what other choice do I have? You know, I don't have a car. I might as well, you know, drive that thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, try to, but I felt like inside he was like, they did it because they killed my goddamn, they killed my dog. Yeah. I'm totally going to like beat the shit out of these people.
You killed my dog. You take my car.
Yeah.
You're going to die.
Fuck you.
Yeah. I found it kind of, I don't know what to call it, interesting or weird, but the fact that the gang that's the bad guys, they're all wearing bondage gear.
Yeah, they have like dominatrix sort of.
And
like
the main villain was wearing assless chaps with a loincloth.
And the Jason Voorhees, like the Friday the 13th Jason.
Yeah,
like,
wearing the mask, the Jason mask.
It's Jason, yeah, in bondage gear. Like, that's what I thought, yeah.
It was just strange.
I think the reason is, like, if I remember correctly, the first Mad Max, like, the premise was sort of based on, like, George Miller's take on, like, the rising biker gangs coming up, and, you know, they sort of, like, this big 80s gangs that were coming with the big spiky hair.
They had that look. One would think that a group in the middle of the Australian desert would want to cover up a bit more, though.
Yeah.
The main bad guy, the one that looks like Jason, he did mention something about how he uses fear to sort of control something, and I figured maybe that sort of look, if everybody in his gang had that look, I figured maybe that it would...
Yeah, and that I figured kind of the same thing.
Right.
But it was distracting to me.
But of course, if you give yourself the name Lord Humongous, it kind of...
What? That's his name?
Yeah.
His name was Lord Humongous.
Oh, right on.
The Humongous. Then you've got the feral child who doesn't speak, which I couldn't figure out. He lives in a village full of people.
He's narrating in the movie as his older...
From the future.
From the future, yeah. which I thought was kind of interesting.
Eventually he learns English, but he's in this village. No one's teaching this kid how to talk.
I think they just you know, he's a little crazy. Let's just leave him be. But, you know, he could be part of our group, but he's still a little crazy, so.
Yeah. Teach him to talk!
There is an interesting fan theory that for anyone who's seen the new Mad Max Fury Road, it's not, you know, they recasted, of course, Mel Gibson as Tom Hardy, and, you know, there is a cool fan theory that the Mad Max and Fury Road is not the Mel Gibson Mad Max, but it's actually the feral kid Mad Max who was growing up and has taken the moniker of Max. To pay tribute to him, right. And he's helping this group out.
I was thinking of Tom Hardy in that new Mad Max, and he, you know, I felt like he did a good job representing the vibe of the Mel Gibson Mad Max, you know.
I haven't seen it, but now I want to. I had no interest in the whole series, so I didn't.
It's pretty good.
Fury Road, but I've heard amazing things about it. So.
Yeah, visually, it's like, wow. And
do you recommend watching the third one, the Beyond Thunderdome?
Can't we just get Beyond Thunderdome?
There we go. That's what I was waiting for.
lovely. Yeah, and I haven't seen Beyond Thunderdome. I haven't seen the first one.
I know everyone considered it probably the weakest, but it's probably still like a good movie that people still watch.
Yeah. I heard people like it. Yeah.
A lot of people consider this one, The Road Warrior, to be the best of the three trilogies. And so
okay.
You said
I really dug the story. I love how it ended. Yeah. Did not see the ending coming.
I thought that was a nice ending.
Yeah, that was really cool. Like, it shows how much of a nice guy Mad Max is, you know?
Well,
like,
there's nice. I mean, he's a murderer.
Not full on. Like,
there's nice, and then there's Mad Max nice.
Yeah, well, yeah, there we go. I'm going to...
Good intentions.
Well, yeah, good intentions, Max.
Deep down, a nice person, Max.
Which is a much better name, I feel.
nice once you get to know him, Max.
Yeah. Yeah, as long as you don't bother me or kill his dog, he's fine with you, Max.
Yes.
Yeah,
stay out of his way, he'll stay out of yours, Max.
Yeah. Oh,
don't you touch his car, Max.
Ah, oh, lovely.
We'll work for gasoline, Max. Please.
Max.
Yeah, that's another thing. They call it guzzoline. They don't call it gasoline. They call it
you know, all these future generations, they have a little.
Yeah, it's guzz, like, yeah.
Well, I think you were just hearing the Australian accent, maybe.
No, because in the new one, they call it guzzoline.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
What do I know?
But it might be an Australian thing. I don't know.
I just heard them saying gas. I didn't
it might
that.
Be the an Australian thing, an Australian accent, but I feel like they're saying guzz, like guzzling.
I think it works either way. I mean, because, you know, every generation comes up with new idioms.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah.
So, of course, in a post-apocalyptic world where everyone's all isolated, people are going to start talking differently, calling things different things. But the British and Australian, they call their gas petroleum, while we just call it generic gas. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we already have that. So, you know, I mean, it makes sense either way.
Yeah, right.
What did you think of the sidekick character? The pilot?
I loved him. I mean, I loved him more for his quirkiness. Like, he has a copter bike thing, which I thought was cool.
Yeah.
It looked cool.
I liked that, too. It was kind of
called an autogyro.
It was like a helicopter, but with a bike seat.
Right. And in the beginning, when they showed it, and they don't show that they like, he's using it, like, I was like, oh, man, they're never gonna show him using it again, and it's like, they just put it there so that it would look cool, but they do use it.
Yeah.
I loved that, and, like, it was a nice surprise, like, I felt, like, because I thought they weren't gonna use it.
Auto gyro.
I really liked the guy who played the character name is Papagallo, but he's like the leader of the village.
Are we talking about the blonde leader?
Yeah, the leader.
Hey, that guy?
Where do I know him from?
I thought I knew him from something as well, but I looked up his filmography and I could not find anything else.
The guy who plays the gyro copter thing, mm-hmm. that guy, he was in Ace Ventura When Nature Calls. He was one of the Australian bad guy dudes.
Yes!
That's him, yeah.
Okay, yeah, but this other guy.
But the other guy, I don't know.
Ton of stuff.
Really? I've never seen him before. Like,
little things. Little parts. A lot of TV, movie parts, that kind of thing. It stops in 2002, I assume, maybe because he died?
No, he's still alive.
No, he's still alive. Okay, so we just stopped doing things. But yeah, a lot of little parts. Maybe I saw him on, like... Oh, Max Headroom.
Max Headroom. Lovely.
Never saw it.
Oh, check out Max Headroom. That's an 80s... Must see. He was in Highlander, the 95 Highlander.
What's his name, the actor?
Michael Preston.
Okay.
Anyway, I liked him. He was good.
He was in the Highlander series. That's probably where I know him from.
Probably.
Oh, okay.
Because I've watched about every episode of that, so I'm sure.
Another thing was how smart that dog was. Because when he held captive the copter guy,
mm-hmm.
and they were riding in his car, the dog was holding a bone that was attached to a string that was attached to the
shotgun.
The shotgun mm-hmm. Trigger. And you see the guy's like, he's like, oh God, the bunny! No, the dog's gonna... No! And the dog's like, nope. Nope, I know my shit. Don't worry, I'm gonna kill you.
What I thought was really funny is like this dog has been perfectly calm, just you know, chilling out. He the sidekick, the gyro captain, he's been handcuffed to this log, and Max is eating a can of dog food. And he gives the rest of the can to the dog, and Gyro Captain goes after it. And the dog is all calm, and then all of a sudden, like, on just a split-second change, the dog is like, I will rip your face off if you go anywhere near my food.
That's just mine, dude.
Yeah, and it was awesome, because that's how dogs act, and especially if they're hungry.
Right.
At one point, the dog was so well-trained, I thought it was a puppet. There was one scene where he was going from kind of dozing to being awake, and it was such
the way he moved. Yeah,
yeah, it was.
There was a particular way.
It was such a fluid motion, and he had such a look on his face. I had to rewind it because I thought it was an animatronic, but it wasn't.
Right. He had such a calm sort of vibe to him. Yeah.
And then they kill them, those assholes.
I know.
But anyway.
Never mind. I was gonna say something. It's not really a spoiler. But, well, in the new one, there's like, did you see the new one, Steven?
No, Pure Road? No, I haven't seen it yet.
Oh, well, there's a point where he's flashbacking. The characters he's met from the previous movies.
Oh, really?
And I think you see the dog. In a flashback. Yeah, I don't remember, but I kind of do remember a dog being there. So I thought that was cool that they would include the dogs.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to check out Fury Road.
Yeah, Fury Road is great.
Because I've heard really good things.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was. Mad Max 2, The Road Warrior.
Is there anything else? I feel like we've...
I think we've pretty much covered it. Is there anything else you have to say?
No, I figured there was more. No, I mean, I think I was going to mention something about, like, their obsession with gas, but I guess it would make sense since all they do is...
Well, it's just weird, like, you know, they're in a post-apocalyptic wasteland, you know, where gas is scarce, and yet they're all driving these big gas guzzlers.
Seriously.
Yeah. All over the time.
And that's the thing, but, like, if they...
But it's more of a style choice.
Right. There we go, yeah.
You would think that they would be throwing all the motorcycles on the big truck and just using the big truck and saving gas, but they're all riding at the same time.
Yeah.
This game. And it's like, okay, yeah. Do you want to conserve there? You know, like...
Yeah, we're good.
Yeah. No.
You figured, yeah.
We're saving money on this bondage gear, so we're good.
At times, though, they're
money with all the assless chaps we're wearing.
You know, you gotta look good.
Yeah.
Out there, you know, you never know. You know, you know, you're gonna come across maybe a nice dame. I don't know. Anywho, so yeah, I feel like we've covered it all. Yeah.
Cool. And that just leaves the gift.
The gift. My goodness, the gift.
Gift.
I'm surprised that Steven didn't like it.
No. It's not that I didn't like it. It's definitely a good movie. It just wasn't what I... It was completely the opposite of what I was expecting.
So you're saying it, because you mentioned that it wasn't like the gift, the game, or...
Yeah, well, yeah, okay. Based on the cover art and based on the title, I immediately assumed that it was going to be, you know, it was going to be in the same realm as, like, The Box with Cameron Diaz, where, you know, someone gives him a box and you push a button and then you get $1 million, but somewhere else, somewhere in the world would just die suddenly. Or it would be like the game with Michael Douglas, where it's like this big elaborate game fantasy thing going on, and it sort of blurs the line between, you know, reality and what's real and all that.
Yeah,
but you know, this just turned out to be like a regular, just a regular suspense. There's no like weird element.
You're more disappointed that the genre was different. Was it a thriller?
It was just that I had made an assumption about the movie that turned out to be
false.
Well, I mean, read the synopsis sentence, it doesn't make it sound like it's going to be any of those things.
Well, I mean, like, well, the synopsis I read is like about like a new couple gets their life turned upside down when a friend when like an old acquaintance comes into their lives or something.
Right.
It was vague enough that I attributed some element to it.
Yeah. I knew it was going to be a thriller.
I knew it was going to be a thriller. I just, you know, I thought it was going to be like...
It was more like
Twilight Stony and...
Yeah, okay.
I liked it.
No, it's a good movie.
I kind of predicted where it was going, and I was expecting a stronger...
How did you expect? Because I didn't see it coming.
I picked out right away within the first 20 minutes. I picked out that the husband was going to turn into the bad guy because he was being an ass.
Oh,
and he was being a bully. And I mean,
I got that too. But you're not talking about the ending where he
in the end. I thought they were going to take the idea of the switch around and take it even further. So if you haven't seen this movie, I recommend watching it before you listen.
Yes, spoilers.
Because
we will
be giving spoilers, and this is a movie that spoilers can kind of ruin for you.
Yes.
So if you want to see this movie, stop now, watch the movie, then come back. Anyway, right. Spoilers.
I actually took the husband story by surprise because I was more focused on the weird Gordo friend, but I didn't really see the husband thing coming.
I saw it right away.
I saw it coming. I picked
the Gordo thing pretty quickly of what was going to happen, even with the whole baby thing.
I saw immediately that Gordo was kind of separating the wife and the husband as far as he was leaving the wife alone up until a certain point, and he was focusing all his aggressions on the husband. Yeah. And what I didn't see coming was the fact that they didn't go farther with it. they end the movie with
Gordo
saying, you know, I didn't touch her, the baby is yours, or did I? And basically, you're a liar, so you'll never believe me either way, so you have to spend the rest of your life wondering if this baby is yours.
They sort of played it safe with how they played it out. They could have pushed that.
I thought they were, which he would absolutely do, but only if the wife would let him near him. That's the thing, because she
fucking hates him.
But I thought they were going to take it even further, where we find out that the wife and Gordo have something on the side, or were plotting against the husband.
I never thought that.
I didn't get that.
No. I knew from the moment that she became pregnant that it was going to be Gordo's kid, or Gordo was going to use it against him like
that.
Wait
a minute, you saw that? You saw that coming?
Yeah. I can even tell you the moment I figured out. It was when she had just become pregnant, and she was out shopping, and they spotted him spying on them in the store window. She runs out.
He was a creeper from the beginning. I just figured that was creeper normal behavior.
But for some reason, when I caught him, and then you first see her with the baby bump, it's like my brain immediately went to, it's his. Right.
How did you see that?
It's just a weird connection in my brain.
Because there's a quick shot of after she collapses, there's a quick shot of her being dragged. And then they go to a completely new scene, so you assume that you've missed something important.
I thought that was the husband, because he comes home, and he even confronts her like, hey, you passed out for a lot.
No, yeah. See, I assumed that he was in the house and that we missed something drag. Important.
I didn't catch anyone being dragged, but I did catch that she had a part.
Bed.
She passed out on the floor, and then she woke up on the bed. But then you see the husband there.
I figured it was the husband. Yeah.
But then he says, you were passed out, you know, when you were gone, and he made no mention of her being on the floor.
That is true.
Which means he saw her on the bed, but she was never on the floor. Which means, how did she get from the floor to the bed? Which means
I figured it was just like a small detail. Maybe it didn't. Well, I don't know.
I always assumed that she passed out because he put something in her drink.
No, I didn't catch the drink thing, but I knew that he was washing and
the drink thing that occurred.
I thought she passed out because of whatever weird illness she was having.
Well, she was addicted to certain pills or whatever, right? Yeah. She would pop some pills. So I figured that had something to do with it.
Well, no, but then she hadn't taken
with the stress.
Yeah.
She didn't seem like she was under some stress, you know.
She took a pill the night before, I assume, to get to sleep.
Yeah, but you know, she
But
went,
then
like,
that morning she had just gone for a run, so why would she take a pill?
She
seemed to only be taking them when she was
That's how it starts.
But the thing is, she didn't question it herself. Like, I just passed out. I guess I was just too scared. Like, she didn't really. It felt like it happened to her before, and it was like
I was frustrated with her because, yes, she was as scared as she should have been in that situation of being alone in that house with someone stalking them. But why would you stay in that house?
Well, because, I mean, you just put a down payment on this house.
This is
a nice, brand new house. So, you know, there is a little pressure.
I mean, your husband's at work. Go somewhere else. Why are you staying in this house all day alone?
They did mention that she wanted to work. There was a scene where she was talking to her husband about, I do want you to work, but, you know, like... But
no, I'm not even talking about get a job. I'm talking about during the day, if you're scared, don't stay home alone in this house where this guy knows where to find you. Go to a bookstore. Go somewhere in the public where you're not scared to be alone.
She had certain work to do at her home or something. Like she didn't mention she had...
We see her doing is going to run and then being afraid.
She had no work.
They do mention... Yeah, she didn't, but they did mention that she did some sort of designing or whatever.
Yeah, before, but now she's like a stay-at-home
person.
Wife now. After some little incident,
they didn't mention anything. I figured that's how she just works at home, and they establish her job, but still,
there was a scene where she and Jason Bateman were talking about, what if I start my business up again? Like, so that tells her that she has no job going on right now.
Right.
But she was thinking about maybe possibly in the future sometime getting back into it.
I was still disappointed that they didn't bring it further in the end.
Yeah.
I thought somebody's going to die or...
This movie felt very safe.
I mean, the end... Like, what do you mean? Nobody. Like, what do you mean? What else could go on?
They brought it to such high stakes and then just kind of dropped it. Like, they have this whole scene.
But the ending, is the big reveal, and then that's how
that was right
there.
But it wasn't enough.
The reveal.
What are you talking about?
The reveal wasn't big enough. I think because I predicted what was going on, it wasn't big enough for me.
Yeah.
I didn't see it coming. It felt super huge for me.
Oh, no. Because I knew immediately that the husband was going to get his comeuppance, but I didn't know how. And I was waiting for some big, big, big event.
That was pretty obvious. But the how it ended, the whole big reveal, that's where it's like, okay, yeah, where it stops.
They did a really good job of cutting back and forth between Jason Bateman, the husband, opening the gifts one by one, and cutting back to Gordo approaching the wife in the hospital. So you go from the husband opening the first gift. Oh, my God, it's a key. He's been able to get into the house the whole time. Okay, you go to the hospital. He sees her in the hospital bed. You go back to the husband opening the second gift. Okay, he heard everything we said in that house. Go back to her. He's in the room. She has this my God moment.
Ending, though.
Yeah, this is the end of the ending.
Yeah, but I'm saying, like, that's where you find out. Yeah,
right, but here's where I'm going with this. You go back to the husband, and... he is opening the third gift, and it's a video of him threatening to rape the wife, kind of. And kind of saying, like, I have all the power here. I could have done this. Did I do this? Kind of thing. And then you go back to the hospital, and then all he says is congratulations. And I was waiting for that big reveal to come full circle and for her to say, like, is he opening the gifts right now? Like, I thought she was going to be in on the whole thing. I really thought she was.
But I never got her being in on it.
Because it pissed me off that this woman, the only thing she's good for in this movie is to kind
worry.
Of... Well, she worries, she has a baby, and yes, she stands up for herself, and she ends it with the husband, but at the same time, it's like this whole movie, she's nothing but the moral conscience, and she doesn't stand up for herself. She's just there, and
the reason why the wife never was in on it for me was because it was always from her perspective. Some moments where she was questioning what is real, what is happening, am I going crazy?
Husband was manipulating her to think that way.
Once she found out what a major asshole her husband was, she started feeling relieved that I'm not crazy like I thought I was.
But
in the end, I don't know, just saying I don't want to be with you anymore didn't seem like a strong enough reaction to
I agree, that could have been stronger. There's a lot of elements in this that could have been stronger.
The other thing that I thought might happen was that
I don't think it was necessary for you to see her react in a way where it's like, hey, I don't want to be with you anymore, I'm really super pissed. I think she's always new in her, in her soul, even though, she denied a little bit because of the husband would manipulate her in a way where she would think that everything's okay.
She felt it.
And then in that moment, she was like, you're a dick. Okay, I figured this out. I've always felt this. No, I don't want to go back to the house with you.
No, yeah. Okay, where I disagree was like, yes, she's probably always had a hint that he's an asshole because, you know, even when he's nice, he's a bit of an asshole. But then when you find out the depths that he has, like, ruined Gordo's life and that he has ruined this other guy that you know, he was up for same job as for me and he just made up some stuff to get him investigated and all that. Like, when she finds out the depths of assholishness that he is, then, she should have had a blown up.
I feel like she's always known it.
She should have been, like, out the door, like, I'm leaving.
Yeah, but, I mean, you know, I feel like she's always, I don't know, I feel like she had that vibe that she already knew it, and then she was like,
she knew, like, he was an asshole, but she did not know the depths, and that's where the blow-up moment should come, because of how much.
You know, her character, I don't see her reacting in a way, I just felt like, you know what, that's it, I'm done, you know, like,
Here's the issue I have. What she did was perfectly acceptable and realistic as far as what you would probably do.
Right.
But
and her character, I felt like it fit.
It was realistic, but I think they missed a big opportunity. Because you see the husband all in one day lose everything. He loses his job, he loses his wife, he loses his baby. And I thought they were going to take it one step further. I thought that after he sees the video, I thought he was going to go back to the hospital, confront Gordo, I thought Gordo was going to manipulate him into publicly doing something that would get him arrested.
Yeah.
And he would lose everything, and he would lose his freedom.
He's already been humiliated. Like, what's... Adding more to it, it's not gonna, you know.
Gordo has nothing to lose, and at this point, if he was willing to do all that, you know.
I mean, he already humiliated him.
Humiliated him, but I mean,
that's
this guy ruined Gordo's life. You know what I mean? And I feel like, yes, you can emotionally manipulate this guy.
Yeah, but
you have the power to ruin his entire life. Like, why not?
Think about it, though. I mean, think about it. You don't know if he impregnated his wife or not.
I don't think he did.
That's pretty fucked up.
I feel like that's enough.
That is, but he could also take it one step further.
I'm sorry, no. But that, to me, that's fucked up. I don't feel like that.
No, it is.
I don't know how you can talk about
it. It was fucked up, but I saw it coming, so it wasn't a big thing for me.
But I didn't.
I.
Yeah. But, you know, I didn't see it coming. I really didn't. The signs were sort of there, but still, like, I mean, in the end, that's where... Mm-hmm. Like, I didn't know that he came in and impregnated her, and the whole, he was outside the store while she had that belly when she was pregnant.
I felt like he was just
being, you know, normal behavior creeper. He just continued on pestering this family.
Yeah, no, I kind of figured out that there was something going on, because I don't know if you noticed this, but the first time that Gordo comes in the house, she tells him that the husband is terrified of monkeys. And when he invites them over to that house that turns out to not be his house, there are monkey statues everywhere.
I didn't see that. On the
coffee table, on the sidebars, there was
that monkey in the kids' room, I think.
Yeah, there. Well, that's in their house, but no, I'm talking about the house that he invites them to. Yeah.
No. That's what I'm saying. In the fake house, I believe there was a monkey thing in the kids' room, and they went in there.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Like, he was, like, putting subliminal sort of, like...
Yeah.
Like, I'm, you know, messing with you, but secretly, you know.
And those monkeys in that house are what tipped me off to, like, okay, he knows what he's doing. He's fucking with this guy big time.
Oh, yeah. See, that's the thing. I didn't get that. I just...
There were also some other, like, weak elements in this movie. I thought, like right after when they discovered that this house was not his and it was fake and they had the police over and they were searching for the dog,
mm-hmm.
like, the cop was telling them, like, hey, I can go over there, but I really have no cause to, like, investigate to see if he has a dog. All I can do is ask him. If I ask him, then he's going to know. And I'm like, you caught him red-handed of trespassing and using someone else and breaking in and entering someone else's house.
Right.
You have all the cause in the world to investigate this guy. Yeah. What the f*** are you talking about?
Well, Carl? I think what he was talking about was them investigating him. Because they had no proof.
The guy who
but they have him on charges for breaking and entering and trespassing on someone else's property.
Yeah,
they
but could, that,
they could arrest
that, that, that other that other but still it wasn't enough to but still it wasn't enough to connect it to the house where he
they wouldn't need to. It's enough to get him arrested.
Sure?
and based on that they can go through his stuff.
Yeah, but what happens if he calls a lawyer and then all of a sudden, you know,
connected at any point to why
the, well, what know, happens what happens if they do arrest him for that and then all of a sudden Gordo he calls a lawyer and then, you know, he was able to like get out of that case because
there was still no evidence. And that would have pushed it even further. Like, hey, how is he doing all this?
What I got from that conversation was the fact when the cop said, you know, if I go over there and ask them about the dog, he'll know that you suspect him, and therefore that will open you up to more antagonizing from him.
Yeah.
Right. That conversation leads me to believe that they didn't have enough to bring him in on.
But
exactly.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's what that dialogue is supposed to tell you. But they just had him like they just said that they just found out that was not his house. That even the house owner.
The guy didn't press
and, like,
charges.
So on they know that he was in that house. They know that he broke in. They know that he trespassed. That is enough.
But he didn't break in. He was connected to that owner.
He had a key.
Yeah.
That's still considered breaking and entering. That is still considered breaking and entering.
Yeah, but he didn't press charges though.
That's the thing. If he had pressed charges,
They should have though. They should have done that. That's
yeah, but they didn't.
But they didn't.
Didn't see him as a threat. You know.
That's the point, because he's very good at manipulation, and he made himself seem not a threat to them, and that's why they didn't press charges.
I know that maybe the dude from the other house should have pressed charges, but I guess maybe since he knows him from the job, maybe he didn't feel like it was a big deal, you know?
Right, and exactly. And that's how he was able to get away with all this stuff, because he comes off as very unassuming and, you know.
I mean, and throughout the entire movie, he's like that. You know, he's a little weird, he's kind of a creeper, but he doesn't seem that threatening, you know.
I felt bad for him most of the time.
No, I was put off from the get go. I was like,
I hated the husband a lot more than I hated Gordo.
No, see, I hated
Gordo.
Yeah,
I fucking hated
way more.
I hated Jason Bateman's character so much.
Until they revealed Jason Bateman's past, I was completely on his side.
No, I hated him from the beginning. I knew he was an asshole from the very beginning.
Well, the thing is, I felt bad for both characters. I mean, I hated Jason Bateman's character, but he did mention how his dad was kind of like an asshole to him when he was a kid. Therefore, he turned into this bully character, and. Gordo's that way because, you know, of the bullying from the Jason Bateman character. So that also brings a lot of sadness to both characters. Mm-hmm. You know, because, you know, his father was bullied to him, so therefore he turned into a bully, and then that affected Gordo's childhood. And it's like, you know, God, it's. Jill, you mentioned something about, like, the movies about, like, don't be a bully or whatever.
Yeah, basically.
That has a lot to do with the moral of the movie.
Yeah, that's pretty obviously the moral of the movie is, you know, don't...
It did feel like, don't be a fucking bully. Yeah.
I know there are a lot of people in that wife's situation, but I still find it hard to believe that she wouldn't have known before this point how much of an asshole her husband was.
You can see hints of her, like, you know, off the distance, like, hey, I don't, she's not approving of his behavior, even she's not saying anything. So she knows, but she's also like doing that thing of where like she's writing it off as, oh, that's just him being here.
Yeah, like that's just,
right.
Right.
So, no, like, why marry someone like that in the first place? You know what I mean?
I guess he found him charming.
That's what people do. They always
on his way.
A lot of people, and a
really cool thing that Gordo mentioned that first time he went to their house to have like a dinner, and he mentions how he was like a class president and how he had the slogan of Simon Says, and he mentions like Simon Says we'll get this, Simon Says have a beautiful wife, like
he also has to remember Jason Bateman is just as much of a manipulator as Gordo.
He's manipulator.
That's true. Yeah.
So obviously that she's with her.
So she at some level knows that he's an asshole, but she doesn't know the depth
fully. I'm
just glad that this movie didn't kill the dog.
Oh, all right.
For a minute there, I was just.
Yeah, you just killed the dog, right?
They killed the fish, though. The fish.
That's true.
Fish are fish. I have killed many fish unintentionally in my life.
Okay. I was like, dude, whoa.
No, but I mean, for a certain amount of time, I was expecting her to, like, find the dog dead on the doorstep or something. As a message, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But that was a really creepy shot, though, when the dog comes back and they feed the dog. Well, not the jump scare, but after they feed the dog and they're looking at the dog like, where the hell have you been?
Right.
The wife and the dog share this really long, sad look.
The dog is like, I have seen some shit.
Right, exactly. The dog is like, I don't want to know. Yeah.
Thank God I don't talk for me to tell you.
Yeah, and I thought that was a really cool shot.
Delicious. I'll go to bed and forget about this ever happened.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not here to say that dogs are good actors, but, I mean, it felt like that dog had been through some shit.
They were waving
the look on that dog's face was just...
That dog was acting better than the entire Miami Vice.
Oh, my God, you're right. No,
that dog out-acted Colin Farrell and...
Miami Vice, starring a Saint Bernard.
The dogs from Mad Max and the most amazing thing, more amazing than Miami Vice.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Okay.
I can't
believe you guys know...
I could see it coming a mile away.
It was very big.
I didn't see it coming.
I didn't know what the gifts were going to be. I kept waiting for
one. I knew. As soon as I saw the gifts, I was like, oh, yep, here it comes.
Really?
I knew exactly what was going to happen.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, I didn't know it was going to be CD. I thought it was going to be like a flash drive with footage and stuff like that. Like, I knew what was in the thing. I just didn't know. Like,
I thought
it was going to be like a flash drive with footage, but instead of a CD. Yeah. But
I had no clue what the gifts were going to be.
No, I knew exactly what the gifts were going to be.
That's pretty good.
I thought it was weird that he knew that. Well, I guess he was stalking them, so I guess that wouldn't. And he knew from saying the belly that one time. Never mind, yeah. But it was weird that he found... Well, he was still stalking. Never mind, forget it.
Just ignore it.
Just ignore it.
So, what did you think of this $5 bin experiment?
It was interesting.
Miami Vice happened.
That's a problem.
It's really the lottery, you know, whatever you get, because this is basically just random picking.
Yeah, I mean, and it's weird because the gift, I've wanted to see that for a while.
I had never heard of it.
It's funny that was in there.
I think I had heard of it, I'm not sure.
It's
really a toss-up what you're going to get when you start putting your choices in fate's hands.
And it's so weird because it's a five, and that's a new...
Well, that was deep.
World's a story.
Yeah. that movie is...
Never know what you're going to get when you don't choose.
When you put your fate in fate's hands. Or what did you say?
I don't even know what I said now.
It was very deep. Anyway.
When you put your fate in the... I don't know.
When you put your face in your hands...
Replay this and we'll find out.
When you put your face in your hands, something happens. I don't know.
When you put your face in your hands and you go moo, you sound like a cow.
And guns say, gun, gun! Boom, gun, gun. Bang, bang.
Gun, gun, bang, bang.
Gun, gun.
Oh, Lord. But yeah, the gift is, I found it surprising that it was in there because it's a new movie and it's figured.
I don't know. It
came off
the
as
gift
an indie
was
movie.
One of those movies that is very uncomfortable for me to watch because, you know,
it got me super.
It had a lot of awkward situations in it. Watching awkward situation makes me very twitchy.
Yeah, me too.
It's very hard for me to watch that time.
Personally, I should not have watched this at night because I got very creeped out, especially watching scenes of someone being scared to walk around their own house at night.
That stuff never scares me. It's always the awkward situation that I'm like, I can't sit still. I can't watch this. Irritating to me.
Another thing I don't get sometimes in like these creepy like thriller horror movies, like when they're inside their house and everything's dark and they're walking
turn
on the damn light. What the hell?
Turn on every light. Wake up your damn husband.
Like what I do, I just blam blam blam. Like I just
immediately gun
light switch.
Yeah.
Yeah, gun gun gun.
Gun gun gun.
Bat bat bat.
Yeah.
Oh god, but yeah, no, it's scary. Like, what the fuck? Like, it pisses me off. Turn on the goddamn light.
I do feel like in ways that this movie was also sort of generic and cliche because you know you had the jump scares, you had the twist that we sort of that some of us saw coming.
A little bit cliche in certain parts.
Yeah, and it played safe when it could have pushed the envelope, yeah. But you know, for Joel Edgerton's first time directing and writing, it's a good solid movie, and it
has a weird atmosphere to it. It's not completely cliche in that sense.
It's uncomfortable, and
it makes you question and all that. But you know, he could have pushed a little more, but it's a good solid.
It's not that bad for his first movie. Yeah.
Now call me crazy.
You're crazy.
Oh, damn, I knew it. But Joel Edgerton, the guy who played Gordo, does he not look like a mix between John Cusack and Kevin Spacey?
No. See, I didn't get that at all.
No?
I could see John Cusack in the eyes and maybe Kevin Spacey in the mouth.
For me, I cannot take my eyes off his cheekbones. His cheekbones, yes, they're so high and so out. And he has like this otherworldly alien look to him, so that sort of helps with the creep factor with him.
I noticed how similar he somewhat looked, more in the hairstyle and how cleaned up he looked to Jason Bateman's character, or Jason Bateman, I guess. Like he slightly had the same hairstyle as Jason Bateman in the movie. I figured maybe he used that to sort of like work around with the wife, you know, to make
Joel Edgerton reminds me, thinking about it, he reminds me more of Edward Norton looking.
I still get
a John Cusack feel.
I can sort of see where you're going with the John Cusack.
Yeah, he's got John Cusack eyes. Yeah, I can see it. I guess maybe Kevin Spacey, John Cusack, and Edward Norton. There we go.
I'm not seeing Edward Norton.
I am seeing a little Edward Norton. Yeah, I could see it. I could see it. Like he's got a thin sort of like the eyes are small, a little squinty.
The cheekbones, the hair, it reminds me of like a lot of Edward Norton.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see that.
Rounders or...
I suppose.
Yeah, a little bit. All right.
That is going to wrap it up, I think, for this episode. Hope you all have a happy new year. Hope you had a good holiday. Mm. And we will see you next month. Bye.
Greetings from the Humongous, the Lord Humongous, the warrior of the wasteland, the Ayatollah of Rock and Roller!